Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison, part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. I'm Joel Katz, and joining me once again, our old friend, a return visit from Dr. Alexander Abkin, Medical Director of Bariatric Surgery at JFK University Medical Center, recognized as a center of excellence in bariatric surgery. Good morning, Doctor.
Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you on the program once again. I want to get into how the pandemic is still affecting those, the obesity epidemic. We'll get that in a moment. But if you could just do a quick review of what is it you do there at the center.
Well, thanks for asking. So basically, we are a weight loss surgery program, but it's a comprehensive program. So before we do the surgery, we're with patients who are proper candidates through a comprehensive program, including dietary counseling for 3 to 6 months, behavioral counseling, exercise counseling if they're interested. And then we make sure that people get the best shot of getting their life back. And obviously, patients have to meet the criteria for weight loss surgery, mm-hmm. which are well established, which goes by the body mass index criteria, which has been in place for a long time, and National Institute of Health recently actually lowered the indications for weight loss surgery from BMI of 40 with no medical problems to BMI of 35 with no medical problems, or BMI even 30 if people have significant medical conditions such as diabetes, hypertension on multiple medications, obstructive sleep apnea, et cetera, et cetera. So basically, the surgery is really the mainstream. That's what the message is, not the last resort like it used to be.
Right. So the criteria, there's a lot of criteria that needs to be met. You can't just think, okay, I want to lose some weight. I'm going to go and get the surgery done.
Absolutely not. That's why there's BMI indications, which mm-hmm. stratify obesity in several categories. If you're overweight, meaning your body mass index between 25 and 30, you don't meet the criteria for surgery. If you are obese, BMI of 30 to 35, and you have significant comorbid conditions such as diabetes, sleep apnea, high blood pressure, you may be a candidate for surgery. If you're BMI of 35 and above, you definitely are a candidate for surgery, especially if you have the same comorbid conditions. That's why it's very clearly spelled out in National Institute of Health, consensus, and it's how we're guided by those criteria. We're not just saying people want to lose 30 pounds, sure, let's have the surgery done.
Right.
That's not how it works, and we try to be scientific about who needs surgery, who may be a candidate for medications, who is not a candidate at all.
So the BMI criteria went from, it's no longer 40, it's now 35. But
it has been lowered because of the rapid expansion of obesity epidemic
sure.
in this country. It's estimated that almost 50% of the American society is obese. And by 2050, 50% of Americans will have diabetes if that obesity epidemic, which is leading to diabetes, is not controlled. So it's out of control. So National Institute of Health proactively trying to lower indications for surgery, which is the best tool for getting the weight back and resolution of those medical problems.
So the BMI being at 35 is certified as obese or considered obese. What is the high?
It's a class 2 obesity, correct, yes. Class 1 obesity is BMI of 30. It's basically like a stepladder fashion.
I see, But what is the highest BMI that you've seen? Like, how high can you go before? I know that's a kind of a strange question, but
I can tell you that no bariatric surgeon wants to see the patients. The only patient who he sees is the patients where the show my 600-pound life. But the biggest patient I personally operated was in excess of 600 pounds, and their BMI was almost 100.
100, wow, okay.
Right. So, but you have to realize it doesn't mean that when people looked at that show, my 600-pound mile, I want people to understand, 50% of Americans are obese.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying 50% of Americans need surgery, but 50% of Americans needs to do something about their weight problem. And if they wait till they are is 600 pounds, either something disastrous will happen, or you know, we cannot help them, or the surgery carries prohibitive risk that pretty much surgeons will tell them to turn them down.
So the 100 BMI, is that the percentage of the body mass?
Or BMI, it's a calculation of percentage over the excess weight.
Okay,
so,
I see.
So, you know, at BMI of 25, you are at the, you know, at normal percentage of the excess weight. At BMI of 30, you are at X amount above. It's a excess. It's a calculated number because, listen, if somebody is 7 foot tall, they can be 600 pounds and they may be slightly overweight.
Sure.
If somebody is 5 foot tall and they weigh 600 pounds, they are super morbidly obese. Maybe their BMI is 400. It's a formula which takes into consideration patient's height and patient's weight. So it's a calculated ratio which uses those numbers and it changes accordingly.
Sure. And what would be considered a BMI that'd be unsafe at a low number?
Well, I mean, if somebody comes in, let's say now, you know, to the office and say, hey, I have a wedding coming up, and we had those phone calls, quite frankly,
wow.
It's a true story, and I'm 30 pounds over the ideal weight. I need to get in a dress. I'm, you know, I'll need to look good. Those people don't meet the criteria, and they will be told, hey, go to the gym, eat healthy. You will lose those 20, 30 pounds. So you have to meet this BMI. So BMI of 30 generally with no medical problems is not a surgical candidate. BMI of 30 with significant medical problems such as diabetes, hypertension, sleep apnea will be considered a surgical candidate. It doesn't guarantee, however, that the insurance company feels the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We, the doctors, National Institute of Health, have guidelines or criteria. Insurance companies can have their own guidelines, so we can tell, hey, we will do the paperwork, we'll put you through the process which your insurance company requires, but there's no guarantees that are being made that they will go along.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the world we live in. Everything has to be run by the insurance through the insurance.
Dr. Alexander Apkin, Medical Director of Bariatric Surgery. It's not just surgery, right?
Well, listen, more and more, As you are well aware, people are turning to the new medications for potentially the first line or the second line or the third line before they consider surgery. So it's very important to counsel those patients properly. If somebody, again, comes to me and their BMI is, let's say, 45, way over the established criteria for weight loss surgery,
mm-hmm.
and they come in and they say, I want medications, I don't want the surgery, they need to be told what reality about medications is. And those realities are multiple fold. Number one, we don't know if the insurance company will pay for it. If it don't pay for it, it can be about $1,000 to $1,500 out of pocket.
Okay.
Number two, you have to take those medications for at least 6 months. Number three, they have significant side effects, nausea, vomiting, inability to empty your bowels, gastroparesis, which lack of emptying of the stomach. I'm sure you've seen those horror stories on news everywhere,
mm-hmm.
popping up of those medications, right?
Sure.
And number four, those medications, expected weight loss is 20 to 30% max of the excess weight. So which means they still will be in obese or even morbid obese category after the completion of that process of 6 months. If they're lucky, if insurance company approves it, if they don't have to pay out of pocket, if they can tolerate the side effects. And then also, last but not least, when the medication 6 months program stops, what do you think is going to happen with their weight loss? And the chances are majority of the patients, studies show, gain all the weight back.
Yeah.
Versus surgery, you do it once, you do it well, you get your life back, you lose all your medical problems, you lose 50 to 70, if not 100% of the excess weight, some patients do, and you never have to worry about medication side effects.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying surgery is the only option, but surgery nowadays has extremely low risk if it's done in a program like ours, which is Center of Excellence. The risk of serious life-threatening complications is about 1 in 1,000 procedures, so exceedingly low. I'm not saying zero. It's never a zero guarantee, but you know, it works and it has low risks, and you don't have to worry about going back and forth like a shuttle with those medications. So that's kind of how we counsel patients. If they still want medications, we see if we can get them on board with medications. So we'll be glad to do it. But most of the people then come back and say, you were right. I think I need surgery. So that's kind of where we are. We're supposed to counsel and educate patients, not just sign them up whatever they want.
So we touched on this at the top of the program, that we were going to talk about how the pandemic, which is somewhat in the rearview mirror at this point, but it still has an effect on the obesity epidemic. Can you talk about
sure.
that?
Well, I think, we hope it's as a disaster with stroke problem in this country in 2020 is behind us. But the COVID as a virus is not going to ever go away. And we still mm-hmm. have flares up and people have diseases. But I think the death rate is substantially lower. So hopefully you're 100% right. But what happened is obesity epidemic, while we were all working remotely, stressing out, sitting at home, not going anywhere, the obesity rate dramatically increased. The lifestyle, we were stuck and, there was no way out. So the problem is, as we know, people who have obesity gene or predisposed to obesity, it's very hard for those people to lose extra weight, because even if they just go back and start doing normal things they used to do, extra weight they put on is more difficult to function, more difficult to go to gym. Mm-hmm. They may already acquired more medical problems, which require taking medications for those medical problems, which further worsen their metabolic derangement of obesity. So it's unfortunately will have long-lasting effects on the society, including childhood obesity, because obviously the whole family dynamics are family dynamics of children gaining weight like parents gaining weight at home while you're sitting and stressing out at home with a pandemic, and then children cannot go to school and children are glued to devices instead of being outside and playing. This is the next wave, and we've seen it. I just recently did two surgeries on a 15-year-old's because they are super morbidly obese, and that's the only option to get their health and weight back. So that's what's coming down the pike, so to speak. And unfortunately, we need to be prepared how to deal with this. And surgery may be the only good long-term offer for those people to get their health back.
Can you describe how we normalize obesity acceptance and the term obese, how it has now become an insult, something that people use for fat shaming instead of just a medical definition?
Well, thank you for bringing it up. I think it's unfortunate that it is happening in the society. The term obese is not a derogatory term. It's a medical term, as I said, established to classify people who are overweight. So it is a medical term. And so as far as I'm concerned, we physicians use that term to counsel patients who need to lose weight, whether they need to lose a few pounds or if they need to lose 200 pounds. It doesn't matter. It's a classification. These classes go from 1 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
So to turn it around, since a society in general is gaining weight, and as I said, some studies show almost 50% of Americans are obese, some people turn it around and say, let's normalize obesity, and those who call us out, we're going to ostracize them and make it their problem. I think it's sending the wrong message. Instead of addressing face on obesity and how it leads to comorbid conditions such as diabetes, high blood pressure, coronary artery disease, stroke, cancers, some cancers are linked to obesity, instead of facing it and saying, let's lose weight, let's find out the way to be healthy, we being ostracized, me meaning some medical people mm-hmm. being ostracized, saying, how dare you call us obese? I think a society has to really take a deeper dive into truly you know, addressing the problem, which is going to cause exponentially more problems than death and destruction from health disasters down the road. And, you know, I think more conversations have to be had on both sides, why we doctors do things a certain way and why we classify people and call it a certain way, instead of trying to paint us in the corner as if we are bad guys, fat-shaming people with those terms, which are really medical terms. And I think that's kind of the conversation to be had further.
Our guest is Dr. Alexander Apkin, Medical Director of Bariatric Surgery at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. You mentioned there are four obese classifications.
Right. Even people with overweight are class one obesity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so BMI 25 to, you know, 29. And then there's class 2, 30 to 35, and class 3, 35 to 40, and class 4, 40 plus. So, you know, that's kind of the classification of classes. So even people slightly overweight are called class 1 obesity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, it's a medical term. It's not a derogatory term. And everybody in class 2 plus hypothetically can be a candidate for surgical intervention successfully.
Right. So if you have to be stage 3 or 4 in order to qualify.
Well, or even stage 2, you know, BMI 30 is class 2 with significant medical problems.
Oh, okay.
Remember, we talked about diabetes, sleep apnea, hypertension.
Sure.
The new criteria lowered that, where you wait to see if all insurance companies follow the suit. For instance, Blue Cross of New Jersey allows surgery for people with BMI 30 plus if they have diabetes. So this is a huge, huge accomplishment because Blue Cross of New Jersey is a very big carrier in New Jersey, and they recognize the importance of offering their customers proper care. So they recognize surgery can be safely offered to their customers if their BMI is 30 and they have diabetes. So class 2, and they can qualify.
Okay, let's get into some of the procedures that your program offers. Can you comment on the different types or maybe just the most popular or however
Sure.
you want to share that?
Sure. I think the truth is we need to talk about the most popular, and the most popular procedures in the country, and our program is no exception, is a procedure called laparoscopic vertical sleeve gastrectomy. And that's and when I say laparoscopic, all procedures done in our program are minimally invasive, meaning they're not done for big incision. They're usually four small incisions. And that allows for faster recovery, less pain, and faster return to normal activities. So that's a procedure which is most popular in the country. We still offer what used to be a gold standard and now taking the second place procedure of laparoscopic gastric bypass, which is excellent, especially for patients with diabetes and acid reflux. And we offer a fair amount of revisional surgery, and so again, all done laparoscopically. If somebody had surgery and had some unfortunate complications, or because of the pandemic, they have gained the weight, mm-hmm. or in the past, let's say the procedure gastric banding was done, which is no longer popular, pretty much nobody's doing it, and those gastric bands need to be removed before they cause problems, we will do a revisional surgery by taking that gastric band out, and then converting those people to either sleeve gastrectomy or gastric bypass. But again, we counsel the patient on their options. We ask, we look at the list of comorbid conditions, and we try to tell them which procedure is best for them, but we don't force people to only take our lead on it. We want them to be part of the successful team and make it part of the decision-making process.
Now, you mentioned the most popular, the laparoscopic vertical sleeve gastrectomy?
Gastrectomy, yeah.
I just want to, the term sleeve is a bit of a misnomer, correct?
Well, I think people call it the sleeve because the shape of the stomach, it looks like a tubular structure. So people say tube, sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no foreign body or sleeve being inserted anywhere, so to speak. Some people actually has come to my office for a consultation and say, hey, doc, can you show me that sleeve you're going to put into my stomach? there's no sleeve being put in anywhere. What that procedure entails, we surgically remove about two-thirds of the stomach, and we leave the stomach in the shape of the tube or sleeve, the removal of that, you know, 60 to 70% of the stomach volume decreases the production of the hunger hormone called ghrelin, which really controls our satiety and appetite and how we eat and interact with food. So we control with that operation both the portion size, which will be size of the normal meal, 6 to 8 ounces. That's the size of the normal sleeve stomach. And then the hunger will be reduced by about 70%. So combining in one operation those two crucial elements of portion control and hunger control enables patients to comfortably eat normal meals, meaning normal smaller meals, of course, mm-hmm. and while they're not hungry or substantially less hungry. So that's how this operation works. And that's why this is the most popular operation in this country.
Right. I just wanted to differentiate between the sleeve, which you just talked about, which is not right. A sleeve at all. And I think some people get it confused with, and you kind of mentioned this about some of your patients, get it confused with the band, which is not popular anymore.
Well, listen, the band is still an approved procedure, and you're absolutely correct. The gastric banding is a foreign body. It's an inflatable balloon which goes on outside of the stomach and attaches to the portacath reservoir, like cancer patients have portacaths when they have to have chemotherapy. Same concept, except it goes around the stomach and gets inflated with saline to decrease the portions. The problem with that procedure, over the years, people develop severe problems with esophagitis, reflux, acid reflux. Sometimes the band can even erode inside the stomach,
yeah.
Overinflated, and then it's an emergency to get the band out and save a patient's life. So basically, the procedure fell out of favor because of those long-term side effects, and we try to discourage people, if they want it, from having it, because we're pretty much committing those people to have more surgeries down the road from complications of that mechanical device. It's still approved as a procedure by our society, but we recommend really they should consider better options such as sleeve gastrectomy.
Okay, we have about a minute left, and with that minute, I'd like you to talk about, let's say I'm a patient, I come in, let's say I weigh 350, my BMI is 40, 6'3", if that matters, and I'm approved.
Right.
Everything's good to go. How long is there an average time before I get to a, what would you call, a manageable weight or the goal weight?
Excellent question. Very good. Thanks, Joel. So basically, I typically tell patients ahead of the time, and this information is actually available on our website as well. We have an online seminar recorded for patients' education. But in the first month after surgery, typical patient would lose 10% of their weight. So if you said, hypothetically, it's 350 pounds your starting weight. Mm-hmm. We expect patients to lose between 30 to 40 pounds of that size in the first month. And then after that, for the first 6 months, it's most rapid weight loss, and the weight loss typically will be 2 to 4 pounds per week. So it's a very substantial drop in the weight in the first month.
Sure.
Very robust weight loss in the first 6 months, and people will typically get to their goal weight by 1 year or 12 months after surgery. Some people wouldn't reach that target at 6 months. So it's a very quick process mm-hmm. and to get your life back, especially if you think about it that way.
Well, when you hear the 2 pounds a week, oh, that doesn't sound like a lot, but that's 100 pounds in a year if, you know, everything
goes.
Well,
that's basically what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly. Amazing.
And BMI of 40, by the way, what you mentioned, BMI 40, hypothetical question, is roughly 100 pounds over the ideal weight. So if that patient should be able to lose 100 pounds and get to their goal weight, whether it's ideal or not, at 1 year. It's exactly my point.
Dr. Alexander Apkin, Medical Director of Bariatric Surgery at JFK University Medical Center, recognized as a center of excellence in bariatric surgery. Thank you again for your time. It was nice having you on again.
Pleasure, and thank you for having me.
For more info, go to jfkmc.org. And for a podcast of this show, you can go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. I'm Joel Katz, JFK Spotlight on Health. It's brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. See you next week.